हेलो फ्रेंड्स, द नेक्स्ट टॉपिक फील्डिंग वर्क एंड कंट्रीब्यूशन। इंट्रोडक्शन। द 18th सेंचुरी आवर एक्सेलेंट एंड इंडिस्पेंसेबल 18th सेंचुरी इज नोन इन द हिस्ट्री ऑफ इंग्लिश लिटरेचर, पर्टिकुलरली फॉर द बर्थ ऑफ डेवलपमेंट ऑफ द नॉवल। इन दिस सेंचुरी द नॉवल थ्रू इन टू इन सिग्निफिकेंस ऑल अदर लिटरेरी फॉर्म्स एंड बिकम द डोमिनेंट फॉर्म टू कंटिन्यू एज सच द 100 ऑफ ईयर्स। The pioneers of the novel were Richardson, Fielding, Somlet, and Sterne. The work of this foursome of the monumental significance, particularly because they were not only our first novelists but some of our best. Now, doubt the seed, the novel were already there in the English literary soil, but they burgeoned only with the arrival of these masters. Edison and Steele, Corley Papers, Defoe and Swift, Gulliver's Travel had already provided the raw material for them to work upon. It is debatable whether Defoe be denied the title of the father of the English novel, as many of his stories like Moll Flanders, Raxona and Robinson Crusoe are very close to begin novel. Begin novel, if at all they are considered not to be genuine novels. Whether Defoe was observed David Desses rightly in noted comma properly a novelist is a matter of definition of term. But however we define our term, we must concede that there is an important difference between Defoe's journalistic deadpan and the bold attempt to create a group of people faced with psychological problem. Note comma closed. Defoe was a realist in his own right, but his interest in character was minimal. Critical opinion therefore is not inclined to assent Defoe as the first true English novelist or even as any of them pioneers of the novel. Fielding's greatness. In the four pioneers of the English novel named above, the first two were considerably superior of the rest of the two, Richardson and Fielding. Fielding has been recognized to be the greater. Edmund Gosse, A History of 18th Century Literature, 1902, characteristically refers to the Richardson as the first great English novelist and to Fielding as the greatest of English novelists. Though it stands to reason, if Fielding was the greatest of all English novelists, yet two things cannot be denied. First, that he was one of the greatest, and secondly, that he was greater than Richardson. Among his contemporaries, no doubt there raised an interminable debate as to the comparative merit of the two. It is also on record that Richardson enjoyed much the greater popularity and the praise in the continent. Modern critical opinion is, however, in favor of placing Fielding higher, considerably higher than Richardson in the hierarchy of English novelists. The lacrimosic sentimentalism, prudish morality, and the sprawling epistolary manner Richardson adopt in all his the novels, along with his smugness and conspicuous want of sense and the humor and comedy, all too against him today. Fielding's lively realism, his sunny humor and satire, his incident sanity and fundamental tolerance of human frailty, his keen eye for the comic, his racy narrative, his gift of plot construction displayed in Tom Jones, if not elsewhere too, all contribute toward his excellence as a novelist. Lewis I. Bradwalt refers to the contrast between the Richardson and the Fielding in these words, in inverted comma. From the first appearance of their earliest novel, a literary feud was persisted in regard to the relative merit of the novels of Richardson and Fielding. In personality, artistic method, and ethical outlook, the two men are as far apart as the poles. Inverted comma closed. This literary feud has by now been resolved and the palm has been awarded to Fielding, whose work and contribution to the English novel we are now set to examine Fielding's works. Joseph Andrew, 1742. It is Fielding's first novel. It is a classical example of a literary work which started as a parody and ended as an excellent work of art in its own right. The works Fielding intended to parody was Richardson's first novel, Pamela or Virtue, rewarded, which had taken England by storm in the years following 1714. When it was first published, Richardson was an prudential morality and his nemini sentimentalism, where Fielding target Richardson in his novel, had shown how a rustic lady made Pamela wins dissolute noble for her husband by her rather calculated and discreet virtue. In his novel, Fielding intended in the beginning to show how Lady Body, Aunt Lord B. and Richardson novel, attempt the virginity of Joseph Andrew, described as the virtuous Pamela brother, but in the end discovered to be different. The whole intention was comic, but after chapter 9th, Joseph Andrew seems to break away completely from the original intention person Adam, who has no counterpart in Pamela, runs away with the novel. He, according to Louis I. Bradwold in inverted comma, is one of the most living, lovable, comical, boundless of wisdom and simplicity in all literature. Inverted comma closed. In the word of Edmund Gosse, Parson Abraham Adam alone would be a contribution to English letters. He indeed is the hero of the novel and not Joseph Andrew. Fielding was aware to giving a new literary form with Joseph Andrew, with which he called a comic epic in prose. Jonathan Wild, 1748. Fielding's next novel, as a loose narrative suggested by the notorious gallows bird Jonathan Wild, who was hanged in the 1725. It is a deep, cynical and sarcastic satire on greatness in general and the great Walpole in particular, as also on the many biographers of the as who indulge in exaggerate allegory of the response whose lives they handle. It is too different from Fielding's subsequent works, namely Tom Jones and Amelia, that Austin Dobson suggests that it must have been written earlier than Joseph Andrew, even though it was published a year later. Throughout the work, Fielding keep up a sustained ironical pose reminiscent of the favorite method of Swift. Walter Allen observed about Jonathan Wild in inverted comma, some pages of Swift apart, it is the grimmest and most brilliant prose satire, and perhaps it is even more effective than Swift's because it is not the work of a misanthrope. In order to come closed. Tom Jones, 1749. Tom Jones indeed is Fielding's magnum opus. It is, according to Hudson, in order to come the greatest novel of the 18th century. Closed. Moody and Lovett observe, in structure, in richness of characterization, in sanity and wisdom of point of view, Tom Jones stand unrivaled in the history of English fiction. In Tom Jones, Fielding has a very vast canvas on which he paints his appreciable authority, a representative cross-section of the society of his age. The swarming multiplicity and variety of characters make one feel that there is God's plenty. The same that Dryden found in Chaucer's prologue in his Canterbury Tales, a very remarkable merit of the novel is its excellent structure. Fielding is a master of that architectonic ability which we find so lamentably lacking in the work of most novelists. In Tom Jones, unlike in Joseph Andrews, Fielding does not pay any attention to Richardson and Terry's to represent his own view of English manner and moral of life in general. What he particularly excels in his sense of comedy, in which he, according to Louis Ibertwald can be placed beside Cervantes, an author of Don Quixote. Amelia, 1751. Amelia is the last of Fielding novel in tone and execution. It is markedly different from all the rest. It is a pathetic story of the patience and virtuous wife who suffer much and suffers long. Fielding here works on a much smaller canvas, and his vigorous joviality and sense of comedy are conspicuous by their absence. His fast deteriorating health and maturity of his years seems at least partly to be responsible for his cataclysmic change. Amelia is the only full-length female character drawn by Fielding. She is described by Walter Allen as, a character whose quiet radiance, illuminate and softness, a world of viciousness and deceit. Amelia is the rarest of successful characters in literature, an absolutely good person who is credible. Amelia is a domestic novel, not a comic epic in prose, like Joseph Andrews or Tom Jones. Fielding contribution. Introduction. Both in his technique and philosophy of life, Fielding set glowing example for all the novelists to follow. Major novelists such as Jane Austen, Scott, Dickens, Thackeray and Meredith, as well as the minor one like Fanny Burney and Maria Edgeworth, accepted his influence in varying degrees and ways. Even Lessing and Goethe paid Fielding some very glowing tributes. The English novel in various respects is considerably indebted to him. Fielding might have been less popular with his contemporaries than Richardson at on the development of English novel. He exerted a much greater influence. Realism. Fielding was the pioneer of realism in English fiction. Both Richardson and Fielding were broadly speaking realists, and both reacted against the French romance so popular in their age, as also the effect test of their predecessors like Apra Ben. Fielding also reacted against Richardson's sentimentalism as a falsifying influence on the study of reality. Fielding does not reject sentimentalism altogether. His Amelia is rich in pathos and sentiment. His desire, says Kazamian in Rutkama, is to give sentiment its right place, but also to integrate it in an organic series of tendencies where each contributes to maintain a mutual balance. Fielding is one of the few writers who, despite the wideness of their scope and capable of observing the demand of the reality with perpetual ease. He works on a crowded canvas, but he has been said all his characters inhabit the same plane of reality. His novels hold up to review a representative picture of his age. He is as authentic a chronicler of his day as Chaucer was the latter 14th century. Fielding's truth is not the crude and bitter truth of Somlet. A. R. Humphreys observed in inverted comma, Fielding is the higher and more philosophical truth which epitomizes the spirit and the ethos as well as the body on the time, which deals primarily not in external but in the nature of man and in an intellectual and moral code. Humor, satire and sharp sense of comedy. Fielding is one of the greatest humorists in English literature. The same comic spirit which permits his plays is also evident in his novels. As he informs us, the author upon whom he modeled himself was Cervantes. It is not surprising, therefore, that comedy should be his method. Fielding's humor is wide in range. It rises from the coarsest farce to the astonishing height of the subtlest irony. On one side is his jestful description of various fight, and on the other, the grim irony of Jonathan Wild. Higher than both is that, if ineffable, present an ironic humor that may be found everywhere in Tom Jones, but it is at its best in Joseph and Deuce, where its play like summer lightning around the figure of Person Adams, an English cousin of John Quixote. Fielding's very definition of the novel as a comic epic in prose is indicative of the place of humor and comedy in his novels and later those of many of his followers. It may be pointed out here that Richardson had no sense of humor. He was an unsmiling moralist and sentimentalist. Comparing the two, Coleridge says in noted comma, there is a cheerful, sunshiny, breezy spirit that prevail everywhere, strongly contrasted with the close, hot day, dreamy continuity of Richardson. Fielding's humor is sometimes the satiric kind, but he is never harsh or excessively cynical, and somewhat swift usually are. Healthy morality and philosophy of life. No reason proves so compulsive with Fielding in prompting him to parody Richardson Pamela as Richardson hoity-toity moralism added to a somewhat mawkish sentimentalism. Fielding must have heartily laughed at Pamela's self-regarding virtue. In his own novels, he appealed to motive higher than prudery and commercialism while dealing with matter moral and ethical. He endeavored to show the dignity of the natural and inherent human value. Thus, Fielding preached a morality of his own, which in the word of David Dessès, is goodness of heart rather than technical virtue, with sins of the flesh regarded much more lightly than sins against generosity of feeling. Whether a man is virtuous or not is decided with Fielding not by his external and self-regarding conduct, but by the presence or absence of inner goodness, which generally means generosity of feeling. This says Cross in inverted comma, is a complete repudiation of Richardson, if not an addition. The point of view has shifted from the objective of the subjective, from doing to being, and the shifting means war against formalism. Virtue is, according to Fielding, its own reward and vice a punishment in itself. In the dedication of Tom Jones, he says in note comma, I have shown that no acquisition of guilt can compensate the loss of that solid inward comfort of mind, which is sure companion to innocence and virtue, nor can in the least balance the evil of that horror and anxiety which in their room guilt introduced into our bosom. Even when Fielding insisted that nothing in Tom Jones can offend even the chastest perusal, he has charged by many with grossness and ribaldry. Richardson says Edmund Gross bitterly resented all this rude intrusion into the moral garden and never ceased to regard Fielding with open aversion. Richardson was really mortified, but in the word of Oliver Elton, he only shook his trot like a respectable turkey cock. Plot construction. Fielding was not only a great novelist, but a great master of plot construction also. From Chaucer down to the modern time, English writers have mostly ignored the architectonic part of their composition. Fielding came to the novel from the drama, and though his plays are ill-constructed, at his experience as a dramatist served him in good stead. Tom Jones is, according to Elizabeth Jenkins, an amazing tour de force of plot construction. Coleridge placed it among the three best constructed masterpieces of the world literature, the other two being Sophocles' Oedipus Tyrannus and Ben Jonson's The Alchemist. Fielding defined the novels as a comic epic in prose, but as Oliver Elton points out, in Fielding's novel there is more of the dramatic than epic quality. The last scenes of his novel particularly resemble the last scene of a well-knit comedy, such as one by Johnson Fielding was, according to Hudson, in inverted commas, much concerned about the structural principle of prose fiction, a matter of which neither Defoe nor Richardson had given much attention. To him, the novel was quite as much a form of art as the epic of the drama. Unfortunately, Fielding's successor did not learn much from his example and offended in respect of plot construction as his preceders Defoe and Richardson had done before him. Characterization. Fielding is a great master of the art of characterization also. His characters are very lifelike, excepting few caricatures like Beaudebter. They are not only individual but also representative figure. He himself remarked, "I describe not men but manners, not an individual but the species." His broad sweep as a master of character is quite remarkable. A critic observed, "Since Chaucer was alive and hell, no such company of pilgrims, poachers, Molly's grim adventures and persons surplus had appeared on the English road." Fielding's broad human sympathy coupled with his keen observation of even the finest fantastic element of hypocrisy in a person in his basic asset as a master of characterization. He loves the makes us love at many of his characters, but he is never cynical or misanthropic. He is a pleasant satirist, sense malice, sense harshness. He gives no evidence of being angry at the foibles of his character or of holding a lass in readiness. His comic creation resembles those of Chaucer and Shakespeare, Parson, Tulliver and Falstaff, if they were to meet, would have immediately recognized each other. The topic, Fielding's works and contribution, over.